Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Sunday night here in the city, Steve Thompson in for Gerilyn Steele tonight. Gerilyn will be back next week. Jonathan Lowe is the producer on the program. And coming up before we say goodnight, we'll have a rundown of all the football scores. It is a final in Green Bay. The Packers beat the Bears 27-10. Green Bay now 1-1. The Bears fall to 1-1. Vikes will be in Philly to play the Eagles tomorrow night. Twins won earlier in the day. 3-0. Once again, all the scores before we say goodbye tonight at 11 o'clock. Pleased to be joined by Mike Wall on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Mike is a senior space writer with space.com. Mike, it's been a while. I hope you're doing well.
Yep. Having a good Sunday. How are you?
Yeah, very good Sunday. You know, it was one of those cloudy, cooler days here. I was able to get a lot of yard work done. And then the sun came out, and it was a lovely late afternoon and early evening here in the Twin Cities. And so very, very good Sunday indeed. Hopefully all is well with you out west. Mike, let's get an update on what's going on with Artemis 1, that gigantic NASA rocket that's been on the pad. They've been ready to launch, but they've had problems. They've had leaks, et cetera. Will this thing fly before the end of the month?
They're certainly hoping so. They're working toward like a September 27th launch date. They've got a big sort of test that's coming up this Wednesday. They had that hydrogen fuel leak as you were just mentioning. When they had two previous launch attempts and they were both kind of scuttled by glitches. One of those glitches was a hydrogen leak. It's one of the fuels that the giant moon rocket uses, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. And as they were pumping in the liquid oxygen and the liquid hydrogen during one of the launch attempts in early September, they noticed there was hydrogen leaking. And so they stood down from that day's attempt, and they kind of replaced one of the seals where they found the leak. And now they have to see if that fix actually took. So on Wednesday, they're going to do another fueling test and see if it's leaking again. And if it's not, if it holds, then they'll probably try to actually go ahead with the September 27th launch attempt. So, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, and Mike, in all the reading I've done, hydrogen is effective. We've all seen images of the Hindenburg in New Jersey all those years ago. Hydrogen is an effective fuel, if you will, coupled with oxygen, but it's a very small molecule. And for instance, SpaceX, they use kerosene and liquid oxygen as propellant. Keeping hydrogen bottled up isn't easy, is it?
No, it is. It is a very small molecule. As you mentioned, hydrogen is it's the simplest element. It's just one proton and one neutron, and liquid hydrogen is just H2, so it's two hydrogen atoms. Very, very small, so the tiniest little leak it can get out. It is a tricky fuel to work with for that reason. It is extremely energy intense. It is very efficient, so it's a very powerful fuel for a rocket. But it's tricky to work with. But it's sort of NASA kind of had its hands tied here. They couldn't really choose what fuels to use for this moon rocket. They were dictated by Congress in 2010 or thereabouts that they had to build this new moon rocket based on old space shuttle technology and parts. And so these the first stage engines that are on the Artemis 1 moon rocket, they're actually space shuttle main engines. And these are the fuels that the space shuttle used, hydrogen and oxygen. So it is tricky, but NASA was told to use old space shuttle parts and tech to build the space launch system, this new rocket. So they're sort of doing the best that they can with those instructions.
Yeah, and then the solid rocket boosters, the configuration, and those solid rocket boosters, those I've heard described as firecrackers, that once you light them, they're going to burn through their fuel. It's not like you can shut them down. Once you light those solid rocket boosters, that's it.
They are extremely powerful, too. Yeah, they like provide a lot of the thrust that will happen when this thing actually lights up. And yeah, they're very powerful, but it is one of those things. Like once you light them, yeah, there's no going back. They will burn. So it's a reminder, you know, this is a test flight. You know, everybody needs to keep in mind it's not shocking that we're having like launch scrubs and leaks and various glitches. Like this is the first new rocket NASA has built since the space shuttle, basically. And it's a big one. It's very important to them. It's very expensive. It's very complicated. So it's really not a surprise that we're seeing some glitches. You tend to see those when a new rocket is built and tested. So yeah, NASA is kind of working its way through it, and it's not like a disaster that we're like a month behind when they originally tried to launch. It's pretty much par for the course with a new rocket.
Mike Wald joining us from space.com on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline tonight, and it brings up the point of. And there are critics of this because it has been very expensive. There have been a lot of delays. This latest delay, getting it to the pad, finding leaks, bringing it back to the vehicle assembly building, et cetera. But the program itself has been really expensive. And there are some concerns that with the technology and with the expense, is there a big-time, long-term future for this particular configuration and ultimately this technology?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. And yeah, like I was saying, you know, it's not a huge surprise that we've had like a month of like glitches when it's on the pad, but the past decade of development has been very difficult and there have been delays and cost overruns and all that. So that is a real issue of how expensive this rocket is. Basically, it's costing about $4 billion for every launch that they anticipate doing over the next 5 years or so, if you kind of amortize the development costs and everything. So it is, and that's way, way more than we thought it was going to be when this thing started. Right. And there are criticisms of that, obviously, and then there's criticisms about how long this thing is actually going to fly, because, you know, we've talked about SpaceX quite a bit in our previous discussions, and SpaceX comes up here too. SpaceX is building a giant Mars rocket called Starship. And actually NASA is going to rely on Starship to land astronauts on the moon during the Artemis program. They've signed a contract with SpaceX to use Starship on the first Artemis moon landing with people, which is going to be 2025 or 2026. So there are a lot of people in the space community who think if Starship works as planned, then you're not going to need the space launch system. You're going to have Starship already, which is going to be more powerful and the most powerful rocket ever built if it all works. So you're not going to have a need for this new big new NASA rocket that they spent like a decade and like $90 billion or whatever it ends up being developing. So yeah, that's a valid criticism. NASA would say we built the rocket as we were instructed, and they probably would also say it's great to have two giant, very powerful rockets that can do things and launch things to deep space, to Mars and beyond. It's a good problem to have. It's just it's a question of kind of how we got here and how expensive it was and how long it took to get here that I think bothers some people.
Yeah, and speaking of SpaceX, is there any news? I guess they're working down in Texas on trying to do this first orbital launch of the Super Heavy booster and then Starship itself, the actual vehicle that will go into space and orbit Earth and land near Hawaii if all goes well. But once again, it's not easy to build these big rockets. It's not easy. They make Falcon 9 look easy, but this is quite a bit bigger than that.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger, and it's using a different engine. You know, SpaceX built an entirely new engine for Starship. It's It's a more powerful engine that actually burns a little different fuel than the Falcon 9 does. So not only are they developing a new big rocket and the spacecraft that goes on top of it for Starship, but they're also testing new engines at the same time. And there's a lot of them on Starship. You know, there's 33 of these new Raptor engines on the Super Heavy booster and 6 on the Starship spacecraft that sits on top of it during the launch. So that's like, I mean, every launch has got it involves 39 engines that have to all work well. And it is a big deal, and we shouldn't be shocked if the Starship orbital test flight doesn't work, because, you know, it's a new vehicle too, and it's very complex. But yeah, they are working toward that. They've been doing a lot of testing in the past couple of weeks in South Texas at the site where they build and sort of develop Starship and where the orbital test flight is going to launch. And they've been gradually building up to more complex static fires. That's basically where you light up like a few engines on the launch pad while the vehicle stays kind of anchored down, just to make sure that the engines fire as planned and all that. They've only fired a few engines at a time on Super Heavy. So I would imagine that it will take them a little while to work their way up to like a full 33 engine test fire, but they're probably going to try to do that in the next few months. And maybe we'll see the orbital test flight before the end of the year. I mean, like, I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it is extraordinary. Meanwhile, the business of Falcon 9, the workhorse for SpaceX, and really the most dominant affordable launch system anywhere in the world right now, continues to go about its business. It really is extraordinary, and we've talked about this in the past, Mike, is the fact that they've been able to master the reusability of these rockets. I saw you did a piece that there was a rocket scheduled to launch that was the first stage was going to go up for the 14th time.
Yeah, it is really, we're getting a little bit blasé about it, but it's remarkable. Like, they are flying, there are multiple kind of Falcon 9 first stages, the most powerful stage that's got the 9 engines and does most of the heavy lifting. There are Falcon 9 first stages, there are multiple ones that have flown 13 times. Now there's one that's flown 14 times. It's just, this is stuff that we would not have thought possible 10, 15 years ago, and now it's pretty routine. And just like, I don't know, rocket landings, landings at sea on drone ships, like, the stuff is just happening all the time now. You know, SpaceX has launched more than 40 times already in 2022 with the Falcon 9. It's just become kind of ridiculous how good they are at this and how quickly they can turn things around. So yeah, we kind of take them for granted a little bit, and we probably are raising our expectations a little bit based on the Falcon 9 about what Starship's going to do. We shouldn't expect Starship to be as smooth and as perfect lately as Falcon 9 has been lately. You know, we should remind ourselves that it's a brand new vehicle and it's very complicated, and we should expect a few hiccups. But yeah, Falcon 9 is setting the bar extremely high for the rest of the world. That's for sure.
And then finally, they're building their Starlink low-level satellite network, if you will, to provide internet service. And the goal is global internet service, and they're really starting to deliver on that promise, aren't they, Mike?
Yeah, they've got users all over the world. They've already launched about 3,300 Starlink satellites, which is just crazy. It's by far the biggest satellite constellation ever lofted, that's ever been assembled. But it's going to get bigger, and it's going to get, I mean, they've got permission to launch up to 12,000 of these things, and they could launch another 30,000 on top of that, which is just really crazy, and it makes a lot of people nervous with the space traffic control, to worry about space junk. And from astronomers, you hear astronomers get pretty upset about this just because of the impact that it has on the night sky for them and for casual observers. And it's a complicated thing, and it involves a lot of people. And if we see a satellite constellation with like 40,000 satellites, that's gonna involve a lot of conversations between a lot of different stakeholders about who owns the night sky, who has permission, who has the right to kind of to affect the night sky for everybody. Yeah, it's pretty complicated, and we're rapidly coming up on these sorts of conversations. People are already having them.
Yeah, and then beyond that, when competitors want to get into the game as well and launch their own constellations. But the technology is very interesting and is available now. You can go to the website and see if your area is being served. And I've talked to a couple of people that have it, who live outside of typical areas that would be served by high-speed internet, and they seem to be pretty happy with it so far. So very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And they're using it on planes and on boats and in the open ocean now. It's beaming down. And actually, SpaceX announced a plan last month to use Starlink satellites to beam connectivity directly to cell phones. That'll come with the next iteration of the Starlink satellite, which will be a lot bigger and more powerful. But in 2023, they're going to start kind of like direct-to-handset service with Starlink, which is going to be a big business for them, I think, is what they're thinking going forward.
Yeah, I think they partnered with T-Mobile on that.
Yep.
If memory serves.
Yep.
Yeah, they're teaming up with them. Well, Mike, always good to visit with you. We certainly do appreciate your work at space.com and your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yep, sure thing. Always good to talk to you, Steve.
All right, there he is, Mike Wall, space.com, and always a lot of cool things going on. I've always been interested in this stuff ever since I was a little boy and was over at my grandma and grandpa's house on Maryland Avenue in St. Paul when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. That's really my first big memory of a major news event, that July in 1969. Quick break. We've got much more coming up. Stephen Fitzgerald here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. Stephen Fitzgerald, it is Steel Talking here on a Sunday night. Jonathan Lowe is our producer. And Jonathan, I don't know if that stuff interests you, the space and the space exploration and all of that. I've just always been fascinated by it. And, you know, for instance, the ability for the engineers and the scientists to collaborate and build something here on Earth, launch it to Mars, land it on Mars, and have that instrument travel around Mars and send data back, the rovers, for instance, it's so difficult and so hard for me to comprehend, but it's real. And that stuff just blows my mind to think that when I was a five-year-old kid on Maryland Avenue in St. Paul, and that's when it really struck me, and I've thought about it all the time ever since. You know, these guys got on a gigantic rocket down in Florida and flew to the moon and got around and walked around on the moon and got back and flew back to Earth and landed safely. And we're able to tell, I mean, you think about that, even today, it's still mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, the fact that we haven't built colonies on the moon, we haven't been able to get to Mars, we haven't been able to get to other planets or other galaxies at this point, I know it's only been, quote-unquote, been 50 years, but 50 years, 50-plus years, it's a long time in a human's lifespan.
Yes, yeah.
that ain't 5 months from now. So the fact
I think politics got involved in the fact that they had accomplished so much, for instance, in sending human beings to the moon and back, that the expense became a deal breaker, and there were a lot of other things that say, hey, you know, we should be spending that money here. And that argument continues to this day. You know, that Elon Musk takes a lot of criticism for, you know, couldn't that money be better spent solving problems here on Earth? And I do understand that. And should we be spending all the money, for instance, it took to build the Webb telescope, that infrared telescope that sits a million miles away from Earth and are generating all these images, or all the money spent on Hubble, or all the money spent on the probes to Mars. But if you think about just the engineering it takes to pull that off is just mind-boggling to me. It just is the absolute cutting edge, in my opinion, of human achievement. Vaccines are in that category for me, and other technologies. But when you think about building something here on Earth, and you can look into a telescope and see Mars, and in the night sky occasionally you can see Mars with the naked eye, the red planet. But to actually launch something from here and get it to there and get it safely to the surface and then have the ability to be able to transmit that data back to Earth, wow, that's... And that makes you think what we can accomplish here. And if we put our minds to it, the problems we could solve right here on planet Earth. What I'm saying is it gives me a lot of hope that if we collectively put our minds to something, you know, the sky's the limit, so to speak. Pretty impressive.
I like your optimism. Do I necessarily share it?
Yeah,
a little. But I like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah, it really is always fascinated me. So hopefully folks share that fascination from time to time. Because filling in for Henry, I'll sneak in a space guest. I've got a few different people that I talk to, and hopefully you enjoyed what Mike brought to the table.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.